Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima.
Sam Monson joins us from Pro Football Focus. Follow him on Twitter at @PFF_Sam. Sam, thanks for joining us.
Anytime. How's it going, guys?
Not too terribly bad, considering what we're dealing with right now, but we're trying to make it through the best we can. Sam, when you're looking at the draft that's going to happen in about a month from now, do you think the Browns find themselves in a less advantageous position, a more advantageous position than other teams? Where do you see them?
I think the Browns put themselves in a better position because of what they did in free agency. To me, the free agent period is all about ticking off significant needs so that you don't roll into the draft with a massive hole that you absolutely have to fill in the first or second round, because that's when you start, chasing positions that you shouldn't necessarily and avoiding value when it rolls around. If you are in a position where you absolutely have to come out of the draft to fill a certain starting position, you might overlook a top quality player that ends up being available when you're picking because you need to shoehorn a certain fit in there. So I think the Browns did a good job of ensuring that they don't need to do that in the draft, and they're actually in a pretty good spot now.
Sam, what did you think of the moves so far, the notable ones with Conklin and Hooper and then Keenum?
Yeah, I think the key is they're trying to eliminate all the variables surrounding Baker Mayfield. So obviously heading into last season, everybody thought Baker was primed for this great season. He's the next great young quarterback, and really everything fell to pieces, including him. So the problem is that when you try and analyze that, I don't know if you can correctly identify where the problem was. And obviously, people lost their jobs over it, the regime change and all those kinds of things. But we still don't know how much of his play running away from clean pockets and all this kind of stuff, how much of that was because of the offensive line and the pressure and the fact that he didn't trust it anymore, and how much was just him leaning into the negatives in his game that did exist before last season. So I think the team is set about trying to eliminate those variables. You bring in a guy like Conklin, who might never be the best right tackle in the NFL, but should be a good right tackle every single season he starts, and absolutely answer that spot, solidify that area. I think that's a good move. And then Austin Hooper, it's an interesting year to need a tight end because it's not a strong group, whether it's free agency or whether it's a draft. So I think, in abstract terms, you probably overpay for Austin Hooper, but he's an important part in terms of Kevin Stefanski's offense likes to run with a lot of two tight end sets, and they needed that second tight end. So they've overpaid for a guy knowing that he can come in and definitely fill that role. And again, just start ticking off boxes so that you can A, correctly evaluate Baker Mayfield this year, and B, don't have to force anything crazy in the draft.
What about the possibility with not just scheme, but like in game? Because Jarvis Landry was quoted a couple of months ago saying that, after the first 15 plays, we really didn't know what we were doing, and the players knew that. Did that play? Do you think that plays a little bit into Baker Mayfield? Because he is really young. You really need to take care of a young quarterback.
Definitely, yeah. I think as with all these things, the answer is usually it's a little bit of everything. And I think when things went south as spectacular as they did, you kind of have to point to all these things. The offensive line wasn't good. Baker Mayfield started to lean into his negatives. He could never get on the same page with the receivers. The play calling wasn't good. The scheme itself wasn't particularly good, and you add all of those things together and everything just starts to spiral downwards to the point where people lose their jobs and it's a complete clean slate the next season. So, yeah, I think the play calling and the lack of game planning week to week was probably a significant factor that started to compound on all these other things and make everything look worse.
When we look at the offensive line, because we've had a lot of discussions, a lot of debates on our show and in town about just how bad the offensive line was a season ago. What did you find when looking at the tape?
Yeah, I mean, they ended the season, I think, ranked 23rd in our offensive line rankings by the end. So it was like a below-average offensive line. But last year was a historic season for truly, truly awful offensive lines in the NFL. There were four or five lines that were among the worst we've ever graded, whether it was the Dolphins, the Bengals, the Rams, the Chargers, the Jets. All those lines were absolute wreckages by the end of the season. You know, the Jets have basically run into free agency and attempted to find five complete new starters in the offensive line. So Cleveland's was definitely a disappointment and much worse than I think we expected it to be heading into the season, but it was still a decent degree of separation away from the very worst units in the NFL. And critically, I think there's the talent in that line to play an awful lot better. I think they were part of, you know, all these aspects of offensive play are kind of interconnected and they're symbiotic. So when Baker Mayfield starts to hold onto the ball too long and starts to run away from clean pockets, that makes the offensive line look worse than it should, even when it's not playing well.
Sam, just for my own personal edification here, and I know you're on in Cleveland and maybe you don't have it readily available, how did you guys rank the Texans' offensive line last year?
Texans' offensive line was 20th, so it was a couple of spots ahead of the Browns by the end of the season.
Still better.
Not that much better.
Sam. Thank you very much, Sam.
Still better.
Didn't think they were that bad. Go ahead, Lima, take her away.
You see what we're reduced to now?
Champions pose.
Because, look, there's no doubt. The Browns did not have an elite offensive line. Like you said, they didn't even have a good offensive line. They had a slightly below average offensive line. But the reason we bring it up all the time, Sam, is because we're debating how bad of a position that Baker Mayfield was put in. I think Baker was given one of the best, if not the best, running backs in the league. He was given Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry, had relative health, you know, on that offense while some teams were decimated like the Eagles. I didn't think he was given the worst situation in the world, but those that want to put it all on the head coach will say that it was never a chance that Baker could have overcome those odds.
Yeah, I don't think he was in the worst situation in the world, but I don't think he was in the best either. I think, you know, when he's a young quarterback who clearly wasn't capable of pulling all of those things together by himself. And that's kind of something needed to happen along those lines last season. You know, there was a lot of moving parts, a lot of new pieces, and a lot of things, a lot of people on different pages, and somebody needed to pull it all together. And, you know, you can make the argument that that should be the head coach that's the guy tying that all together. You can also make the argument that truly great quarterbacks are able to do that. And Mayfield wasn't, for whatever reason. Now, I don't think that necessarily means that he can't be a great quarterback, but it means that, you know, year two, heading into this season with so much change, he wasn't able to pull that all together. So the answer for the Browns is, well, okay, let's try and do it for him and see, can we get the best of Baker Mayfield back? And maybe down the line, he's capable of pulling all that together by himself if the team needs to go through that kind of transition again. So I think this entire offseason for the Browns is about trying to figure out what they have in Baker Mayfield going forward and trying to put him in the best possible situation to succeed and rolling from there.
Sam Monson joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Okay, let me get to a different conversation here when it comes to the Browns. Nick Chubb had a fantastic year last year, and that was year two. He's going into year three. He's not a guy who gets that extra year. He's only a second-round pick. He's not a first-round pick. Say Baker goes out there and he does struggle and Nick Chubb looks good again. Do we open up the conversation about paying Nick Chubb on this football team, or do you stick to the course of, those contracts don't usually pan out when you pay those running backs?
Yeah, I mean, I think Nick Chubb has been a fantastic running back for the duration of his career so far in the NFL. On the other hand, I'm also pretty fresh off writing an article saying that I don't know that I would ever pay a running back a big money second contract. I'm just not sure it's ever going to be worth it because – almost always running backs are far more of a product of the environment around them than they are their own ability to generate yardage. And if that starts to disappear, if that starts to erode, they just aren't able to replicate that kind of performance. Now, Chubb has been bucking that trend for a couple of seasons. I think he's outperformed the situation he's been in for two straight years. And it's definitely possible for running backs to do that for periods of time. It's just incredibly hard to sustain it long term. So I think all the data says that regardless of what Nick Chubb does, you probably shouldn't pay him a giant money contract. And you only have to look across the NFL at the guys that have had one of those recently. It's almost universal regret from the team that gave them the big money. They're trying to get rid of those contracts. They've cut the guy. The only one that's not an unmitigated disaster so far is Zeke Elliott, and the Cowboys leaned on him less last year after they paid him than they ever did beforehand. So, you know, it's definitely going to be a tempting thing when Chubb comes up to lock him down to a big long-term contract, but all the data says that it's playing with fire.
Curious, Sam, some of those other free agents that are available out there, we've talked a lot about, you know, Jadeveon Clowney, Everson Griffin. Are those guys worth the money? Would you spring for them if you're in a situation like the Browns that just could not generate a pass rush once Myles Garrett was out the rest of the year?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing with Jadeveon Clowney is that he wants top edge rusher money, and he's not worth top edge rusher money. I think Jadeveon Clowney is like a borderline top 10 edge defender at the NFL level, and he wants to reset the market as, you know, the best paid edge defender. So I wouldn't go that far for him at all, and I think that's why he's currently unsigned, because nobody else wants to go that far either. Everson Griffen is another matter. I think Everson Griffen could be had for a pretty cheap, valuable deal, and he can still generate pass rush. He had a ton of pressure a season ago. He was pretty close to matching his teammate Danelle Hunter in terms of overall grade, overall pressure. So obviously he's not a long-term solution given his age, but I think he'd be a really solid free agent signing for pretty much anybody that picks him up.
Where's Myles Garrett ranked for you guys among the league's top pass rushers?
Yeah, it's tough to really nail him down because you never get this complete picture of what he does. And obviously last season we had the suspension, which cut his year in half, but that was, I think, the best Myles Garrett we've seen. And I think he's in that Jadeveon Clowney world in terms of being a top 10 guy, but different, slightly differently put together. I think Myles Garrett is a potential top pass rusher. I think he's potentially one of the best pass rushers in the NFL. I don't think he's the same run defender that Clowney is. And overall, you can kind of debate, how much you weight each one of those facets. But last season, he was on track to be either the best or one of the very best pass rushers in the NFL for half the season.
Sam Munson joining us on the hotline. Let's go nationally to the Tom Brady story. Do you think that is a good fit with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? And how much of a, would you say, decline you saw Tom Brady on last year?
Personnel-wise, I think it's a really good fit. I think you team him up with two top 10 receivers, according to PFF grades last season. You give him some weapons to play with. That defense was heading in the right direction really quickly by the end of last season. I think there's a lot to work with from a personnel and sort of support standpoint for Brady there. The only concern I have is what the offense ends up looking like, because Bruce Arians has this aggressive downfield passing offense, and that's never really been Tom Brady's game. And it's not that he can't do that. It's just we're going to need to see how those two sort of mesh when it comes to developing whatever offense it's going to be in 2020. And we've seen in the past, you know, quarterbacks that have kind of been in one system for years, they go somewhere else and they try and adapt to a new system, and it doesn't really work that well. And the last time it really happened was Denver and Peyton Manning, and eventually they just said, you know what, forget it. Let's junk our offense. You just run what you run, and that's better because we know it works. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with that Tom Brady, Bruce Arians meeting of the minds and what they end up crafting as their sort of joint custom offense. In terms of Brady's decline, so the numbers were sort of a steep decline, but I honestly think when you turn on the tape, you can trace almost all of it back to the lack of receivers in New England. And you know, nobody was getting open all season long. He was left with basically just Julian Edelman for a real long stretch of time, and teams just figured out that if you bracket cover Julian Edelman, if you take him away, there's nobody else in this offense that's going to win. And that's what started to happen, and Brady just couldn't go anywhere with the ball. He had to hold on to it longer than he's held on to it at any time in the last decade. Even when he did, nobody was uncovering, so his play under pressure was worse than it's ever been. So, and you know, this is, people were saying the New England offensive line had fallen to pieces. And again, I think a huge part of it was all because the receivers weren't getting open. So it had this knock-on effect all the way across the offense. So I have a pretty strong suspicion that this season will be something of a bounce-back year for Brady because he'll have some receivers.
Hey, Sam, I got one more for you. Are you guys seeing any trends on how to stop Lamar Jackson? If you could help that, that'd be great.
I think prayer is a good place to start because I'm not sure there's a scheme that's, the way the Ravens were last season, Lamar Jackson was virtually unstoppable. They have designed this offense around his skill set. They've made it so they play to his strengths, they limit his weaknesses, and not only do they limit them, but they actually make his life easier when it comes to his weaknesses because everybody is so focused on stopping the thing that he does so well. Yeah, it's tough. I mean, there's no answer for even when you play sound assignment football, you end up with a guy one-on-one with Lamar Jackson in the backfield and he just makes him look ridiculous, breaks off 20 yards. There's no schematic answer for that. He's just a better athlete than you have lining up on the defensive side of the ball.
Well, I wish I was going to get some way to stop him because we're going to have to see him again twice this year and maybe for a long time to come. Sam, great stuff as always, man. Thank you very much for the time. All the best to you and yours.
Anytime, guys. Take it easy.
Sam Monson joining us on the show from Pro Football Focus on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. I want to get into that when we come back. It's Ken Carmen with Anthony Lima live on The Fan.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.